We heard about it again over Memorial Day weekend. Street takeovers across our state. What are they? Why are we seeing such an uptick in them? Joining us now is Gary McNamara, the former chief of police in Fairfield. He currently works at Sacred Heart University. Gary, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I am well, Melissa. I am fresh off a 10-day vacation to Hawaii, so I am happy to be speaking with you today, and especially about this topic.
I mean, I'm happy to be speaking with you, too. I don't appreciate that you didn't take me with you, but I will let it slide. It's okay.
Right,
I thought we were closer than that, but that's okay.
Right,
I will let it slide.
Exactly.
It's okay. I understand.
Well, my fault. I apologize.
No, it's okay.
So I haven't gone on vacation. I've done nothing. I've been working hard every day, and so there's no place to take. I lied.
There you go. Exactly. There you go. It's fine. It's fine. You don't have to lie to the people. It's okay. We get it. We get it.
That's right.
Gary,
that's
I'm so glad you're here because I've really been concerned about these street takeover situations. First of all, I have to be honest. I had never even heard of them before.
Yeah, I mean, so we're beginning to put a label to it. And, you know, some people call it like meetups and they've been occurring out west in some of the cities out west. But, you know, there's different terms for it. But once you put a name to it, then it becomes more of a hyper focus, not only for the residents and others, but also those that attend these events. It becomes a thing. So, you know, we've seen it over time with ATVs and motorcycles over the last few years that, you know, this pack of ATVs will drive down the street. And for those moments in time, they kind of control the area. Now that we've put a label to it, now they're becoming more of an event. So it's easier to describe it, easier to talk about it when you have a label to it. And that's probably why you're hearing more about it.
So it's interesting you say that, Gary, because when we first heard about it last month, and they had arrested the ringleader from Norwalk of one of these major street takeover events, I thought to myself, this sounds an awful lot like when ATVs take over in New Haven or Bridgeport. So that's what it kind of sounded like to me. Or even like when you have, you know, people doing street stunts or drag racing in Fairfield. I mean, God, Fairfield dealt with that all the time. You guys were at our neighborhood all the time. We have a straight shot right near where my parents live. And we saw you guys all the time in Fairfield because this has been going on. So not to say that street racing or drag racing or street tricks or ATVs, like, we've heard of that. I don't know, though, Gary, and this is where you can correct me. I've never heard of, like, the intimidation thing where you've got a car where someone's like, hey, I have to get through here. And just a massive pile of people are attacking this person, this driver, and not hurting them, but just coming at them verbally and just in their faces. Like, that scene that I saw unfolding last month, that's something I have not really seen before. I didn't even recognize that this was in Connecticut. I thought this was in a major city, to be honest with you.
Yeah, you've hit right on target, is that's what we have to be concerned about. And I find it so hard to encapsulate that feeling and that concern. Is that while street drag racing has occurred in the past, what we're seeing is this lack of respect and that intimidation and that people feel that they can do things regardless of what it is. I mean, we're talking street racing today. Next, we'll be talking about fights at the mall and 15-year-olds dropping a gun that goes off. There's this sense that people can just do things now without consequences at all. That's the bigger issue that we have to really hone in on, because you are spot on that, you know, people can just kind of come upon these things. And this poor woman that's confronted, that should concern all of us. It's not the doing burnouts and spinning your car, because what would happen in the past, we'd show up in Fairfield and they'd all take off.
Yeah, they'd run. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And we would, and you know, the pursuit laws have changed, and I understand why, because pursuits can be dangerous. But and I don't think we'd be pursuing for cars for this type of stuff. But overall, this sense that I can do what I want and there's no ramifications, let alone when you see a video of people jumping on a police car, that should concern all of us. Because if they feel that there's no consequences for doing that, that's the problem. If they can jump on a police car and feel that they can do it, then these poor people that just happen to be driving
They have no shot.
You're right. And that's the bigger issue. How do we start talking about that? How do we start talking about changing perception that, you know, bad behavior, Melissa, leads to bad behavior, which leads to bad behavior. So you know that because we do that when we're raising our children. If you don't stop them from doing one thing, the next time they do something worse, and they do something bad behavior leads to more bad behavior. We've got to kind of look at ways to address that.
So how can we address it, Gary McNamara? What would you suggest?
Well, I think, you know, consequences matter. And, you know, first of all, I know that the state and the FBI has even gotten involved. Even though it's not a federal crime, so when you start looking at the FBI involved, they're more kind of doing some help with intelligence and background. You know, getting the word out that people avoid it is important, and trying to track these events. You mentioned that people who organize these events are being arrested, and there's ways in which we can do that because social media, it plays a big part in driving people to it. But there has to be consequences. We have to start seizing vehicles if we can identify them, even if it's follow-up later on down the line. There has to be consequences. There has to be significant fines, not infractions. There has to be significant fines, and we have to change the way we approach it. You know, seizing vehicles, even start addressing those people that attend the events. Because what we're seeing is there's high school students that catch wind of this and come just to watch.
Well, yeah, which is also dangerous, right?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, it's just, you know, and so the events themselves, while they might have occurred before in the sense of a rally or something, they're not. Innocent victims can be hurt. It disrupts others, and there's the potential for escalation, Melissa. You'll start to see stolen cars there if they're not there already. You'll start to see individuals with guns. It has that potential to escalate where an innocent person can be hurt. Law enforcement can be hurt. Or, you know, law enforcement can confront somebody. It just has the potential to really go downhill. So I think we really have to come up with seizing vehicles, revoking driving privileges for a significant amount of time, and then stiff fines and like I said before, seizing the vehicles. We have to kind of put an end to it pretty quickly. I know that Naugatuck Police, I think the other day or yesterday, put out something that there might be one of these at Walmart. And you know, again, I don't have all the specifics on it, but so word is getting out to avoid the area. But at the same time, you know, these can crop up anywhere at any moment in time, and we have to. And simply telling people we'll just turn around and avoid the area, yeah, that's good if you can. But you may find yourself in the middle of this, and you don't really know what to do. So we have an obligation to stop it from happening in the first place.
We continue to see in the headlines street takeovers across Connecticut, and they can get really dangerous. And so we're talking about it this morning with Gary McNamara, the Chief and Executive Director of Public Safety and Government Affairs at Sacred Heart University. He's also the former Chief of Police in Fairfield. And Gary and I have known each other for quite some time. Even before Gary knew I'd get into the news industry, he was in charge. He was working at the Fairfield Police Department when I grew up in Fairfield. And oftentimes, Gary, we would see Fairfield police show up to our neighborhood because we had a lot of drag racing that happened on one of the long stretches of our road. And the thing I wanted to address with the street takeovers that's really also a concern is you were starting to talk about how younger people will show up to these events just to watch them. My other concern with this is if you're not showing up to watch them, but they're happening in neighborhoods, residential neighborhoods where you have little kids or you have people who work overnight hours. We had that horrible situation in Stamford last year where two workers were leaving their restaurant bar business that they were working at, and they were hit and killed by a driver just crossing the road to get to their cars to drive home. That's my concern is, do you think we're going to see an uptick in young people getting hit by cars? Do you think, do you worry about school zones? Do you worry about residential neighborhoods? I know that these are kind of in more public places, but having them spill into more residential zones because people are on to them. You know, people know about them. Like you said, Naugatuck put out a release. Hey, I think this is happening at Walmart. Do you think they're going to start to spill into the residential neighborhoods? And now we're putting more young people and just families and overnight workers at risk.
Well, yeah, I think that what we're seeing is where people would assume that it's just in inner city or a city or a big city issue. What we're seeing is in more of the rural areas, it becomes an issue as well, or on the highway. So, you know, Tolland, I think, had a big one. That's where I believe the woman was confronted. So cops can be overwhelmed quickly because you're getting a large crowd. They're pumped up and they're not fleeing. normally you see a cop, you know, high school kids have parties mm-hmm. on a dead end street. The cops show up, lights go on, and everybody gets in their car and takes off. They're not doing that. And there's a residual effect of that anywhere, you know, in rural areas or what have you. And the other thing to keep in mind, Melissa, is that if people behave like that on video, then there's that sense of, hey, I'm pumped. So when you're leaving and when you're driving on the highway or you're going through other areas to get to it or get away from it, you know, you're pumped. You're driving that way. Mm-hmm. They're witnessing. It's like watching a movie on TV, you know, a street racing movie or a fighting movie or whatever the movie is. You begin to adapt your behavior towards what you're seeing because it's fun for them. And they see it and they're a gang and they're a group. They're hanging out. Man, that was great. And so you'll start to see this behavior become more normal. And a lot of the younger participants or spectators, you know, they're the ones going to high school and they're the ones that, you know, are living in our world. And so you don't know how the effect that they're having, that it's having on a lot of us. And so, yeah, you can certainly see the sense that poor behavior and poor driving pattern that you witness is going to become poor driving behavior that you do on a daily basis.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, we're talking to Gary McNamara. Gary, before I let you go, I wanted to talk about something else, actually, that was it was on both our radars, but something that's being discussed up in Hartford, a potential law about limiting police from stopping people for minor traffic offenses. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, and I don't know where it sits. It was a Senate bill that talks about making some violations of, especially equipment violations on vehicles, secondary traffic violations, meaning that police can't stop the vehicle just based on that, what they witness to be a violation. And some of them are pretty concerning. So, you know, we in society say that in order to operate a vehicle, you have to take a test and you have to have a safe operating motor vehicle. And part of that safe operating motor vehicle means, you know, give you an example, you have to have two working headlights. Well, if this passes, then if I'm a police officer driving down the road on midnight shift and I see a car with one headlight, I can't turn around and stop that car to say, hey, you need two headlights, stop right the vehicle, it's not safe. I can do it if I stop them for another violation. I can say, hey, by the way, you have a headlight out. But the concern being is that we're trying to limit any interaction with police and the driving public. So, you know, we can't have it both ways. You know,
right.
We're saying that three takeovers, we need more police action and more enforcement. But then on the other hand, we don't want police to stop cars. And I don't know whether this gets a lot of discussion. I don't think anybody really realizes this is under the radar. So we're talking about failure to renew your driver's license or failure to carry your driver's license. All these are secondary violations. Failure to illuminate a rear license plate. The reason we illuminate rear license plates is because we can identify the license plate. So if you are somewhere and you are the witness of a crime, we talk about be a good witness, don't become a victim. Well, part of being a good witness is be able to describe the vehicle. And if we're saying that, you know what, now police won't stop you if your license plate isn't lit, unless it's another violation. What message are we kind of sending? And if we are trying to limit police from contact, then we either have to set the standard of what a safe motor vehicle is to operate on our highways, or we have to find another way to make sure that people have a safe vehicle. You know, ask a pedestrian walking down the street and they see a vehicle coming at them with one headlight. Is that a motorcycle? Are they going to be able to see me on the side of the road? And, you know, I'm not trying to be dramatic about it, but these kind of situations can arise. And I think it was important to at least have that discussion. Actually, somebody reached out to me and said, hey, I know you go on, Melissa, in the morning. Have you talked about this yet? Because there were some concerns in the traffic safety world, not even in law enforcement, just in those areas of traffic safety, mm-hmm. that we're limiting police ability to make sure that the public is operating safely. Yeah. Mirrors on your vehicles. We know that, you know, when you get your driving, and we've talked about driving tests and you should be retested.
Yes, that drives me crazy. I don't know why we haven't done that yet, but that's okay.
Right. You know, what do we do when we get in the car before our test? You have to check your mirrors. Well, that could potentially become a secondary violation. And so even the side mirror, many people don't use their side mirror, but when you're merging on a highway, and you want to make sure you do it safely, your side mirrors can become very valuable. Your rear license rearview mirror can be very valuable. Mm-hmm. You know, not having obstructions hanging from your mirror is important to avoid hitting pedestrians. So there's a couple of things that they're trying to kind of make secondary violations to avoid law enforcement coming in contact with people, which, okay, if that's what we want to do, but then what can we do? Maybe we have vehicles inspected once a year.
Right.
Maybe we do so. You know, we have to do something to make sure that the vehicles being operated are being operated safely. And some of that is equipment. Got to make sure you have safe equipment.
Yeah, that's a good point. Really good point. Well, Gary, unfortunately, we've run out of time, but I do appreciate having you talk about both of these items. And I'm sure you'll be back on very soon. And am I seeing you tomorrow at the walk in Fairfield?
We stopped it. We postponed it because of rain, and it might be raining anyway. So I think that's a sign that, you know what, sometimes important issues, you have to kind of
trudge
through.
You've
got to be there in the bad times. So, yes, I will be there in the morning. Hope to see you. I know you will be there.
Yes.
And hope to see as many people as possible there.
Yes, that's happening tomorrow at the Fairfield train station for Center for Family Justice. Gary McNamara, I appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Be well, Melissa.
Thank you. You too. I think it is so important that we focus on education and options and resources out there for families across Connecticut. And I came across this, actually. Quick shout out to Liz Englander, our education consultant, because she connected me with Bill Akwasa, who is the executive director of Good Child Transitional Center. It's been open for over 50 years in Milford, unbeknownst to me. I did not know that. And it just opened a second location a month ago in Orange. So Bill joins us now to give us all the details. Bill, welcome to the studio. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you, Melissa. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, Bill, what brought you to Milford and to taking over this school a few years ago?
Well, about 6 years ago, man of many, I like to help families. I saw an ad in the paper. They were looking for a board president for Good Shepherd, it was called at that point. And I owned a counseling business. I called my father, my son. And the concept of that was to go to homes and help families in distress or
that were
struggling
cool.
with drug and alcohol counseling. I'm a licensed therapist. So I decided to go and see what it was. From going to visit with the rest of the board members, they end up saying, would you mind running the place for us? Because my predecessor was retiring. She was quite ill and old. And I said, let me see if I can fit it in. I got hooked. That was it.
Oh, I love that. Now, what made you change the name?
Well, when people heard, I'm an MBA as well. So I like to put business to every opportunity I have.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is business, no matter what it is. I just thought maybe when I did a city survey, I wanted to find out what the people thought about the name.
Mm-hmm.
They were acclimated to the name because it was what they knew for 50-something years.
Right.
But to me, it was a little bit of a deterrent because people, when you hear Good Shepherd, you relate that to
religion.
A faith. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to limit anyone from joining us because we're all inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
So for a business, a move I made was to change the name and help recruit more families to come, and it worked.
Yeah, I think it's smart. I am a devout Christian. I'm very open about that with my listeners. But I do feel sometimes that it hinders if people want to go to, like I've told people, I went to Laurelton, loved Laurelton. I'm not Catholic though. And I remember applying for Laurelton and saying, are you guys okay with the fact that I'm not Catholic? Or I had friends who were Jewish and they said, yeah, no, it's perfectly fine. We just
awesome.
Are a Catholic institution.
Right.
So I think that was smart that you were able to say like, hey, it's not a knock at all. It's just
right.
saying, hey, we want to make sure people know really what the concept of this
Absolutely.
Place is versus,
Absolutely.
You know, the title.
Yes.
So I love that. So it
Thank
is now
you.
Called Good Child Transitional Center. What is it that you guys exactly do and what age are you teaching?
For the Orange Center, the Milford Center is called the Good Child Development Center.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have 92 slots. And we serve infants through preschool. So from 6 weeks of age to 6 years of age in Milford. In Orange, that I just opened up last month, we are licensed for 24 slots, which is from 18 months to 6 months. I mean, 6 years of age, sorry.
Okay.
So our primary modality is to provide education and daycare services to families that in need of good quality daycare service. So we're
which
not,
we're lacking in this state.
We're lacking. My staff members are really, really passionate about what they do. They're all trained in ECE credits, and they just love what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Puts a smile on my face when I go there and see them just happy to be there.
Yeah, you can tell. And Bill is here, and we're talking about these two campuses. So tell me the difference. You have the Good Child Development Center is in Milford, and then you have the Transitional Center in Orange.
Right.
What makes your centers different than the typical daycare?
So I want to say probably use the one in Orange. The one in Orange, because after 6 years of just pretty much being and evaluating the needs of the community, I thought maybe we have just a portion of our services that we're not tapped into, and that's addressing social and emotional disorder for children, not just for for adults. We have worked with a lot of other professionals like ECCP, Birth to Three, Birth to Five. They come in-house and they serve our students in different modalities, whether it's mood disorders, whether it's autism spectrum. I thought, you know what, it would be a good idea to have a smaller school that will contain some kids that may need special behavioral services. So I decided, you know, why don't we open one and call it Transitional Center? That way they can go there. We have staff members that are specialized in ABA services, advanced behavior analysis and approach. They're trained in that. They all have psychology backgrounds. So the job is pretty much to be able to spot a child that may be on the spectrum or may have any kind of mood disorder.
Wow.
And then we start to kind of incorporate our services with education to make sure they're well served. A child cannot learn if they don't behave properly. So our job is to teach them to behave, support them with love, nurture. We serve great meals. We have nutritionists. We have LPNs that work there just to make sure we have safety and health for all the students.
Okay, so I'm going to say something blunt, and I hope that you don't get mad at me, Bill.
No,
that
never.
Sounds like top-of-the-line stuff that you are offering. How much is it to enroll your child there?
Well, in Orange, you know, geographically, there may be a little bit of difference between the Orange and Milford location. The reason why there's a little bit of a difference in Milford, Milford is about 360 for preschool.
Okay.
380 for infants. And we provide formula, all the food and breakfast and lunch and healthy meals.
Is that 380 a week or is that 380 a month?
A week.
Okay,
a week.
Got it.
Right. And the Orange, I have a special going on. I'm having services for all students for $450 a week. We do accept Care for Kids. So there's a program called Care for Kids. If people don't know anything about it, they can call. We'll help them do the application. They go by your income and your family SMI. They pay up to 90% of your tuition, and you pay the copay. And we'll work with you. We have a sliding scale. So it's not that much of a difference. And that includes all the meals, by the way. It includes breakfast, lunch, and a healthy snack.
That's amazing.
Thank you.
Why in the world didn't I know about this before Chase went to kindergarten? I'm a little mad at you.
Maybe your next one.
I'm telling you, somebody paid Bill to say such nice things to me today. He's so kind. And again, Bill is here. We are talking about both the Good Child Development Center and Transitional Center. The Transitional Center just opened in Orange last month. And Bill is here. He's the executive director for both?
For both.
Okay. Big time.
Yeah.
Love that. I want to talk more about why. I understand that you're very obviously connected to the community and you really wanted to see what people were focused on. Mental health clearly is something we're super focused on as a nation after the pandemic. But what really made you want to sort of, first of all, create an entirely new center,
right.
But also to really hone in on, let's try to find, if there is anything, find issues as early as 6 months old? Like, what made you want to make that the focus of this new center?
Well, I think when COVID hit, it kind of exposed a lot of unspoken truth or unspoken norm. People suffer with mental health. A lot of people just don't feel bold enough to speak about it. Mental health has become a taboo. It has become something that no one is comfortable discussing except for in private. COVID hit. A lot of people were suffering in silence, but it became a nationwide epidemic. So now the kids, the adults, everyone were on the same platform. Everyone is suffering from the isolation, from this unexpected epidemic that just drove us apart. So I said, you know what? It's time to join I'm a mental health specialist myself as well, but I say it's time to kind of speak out in public. Let people join this movement. Let's make it more norm. Talk mm-hmm. about it. It's, you didn't create yourself. You came out the way you are, and there are people like ourselves that are powerful enough to speak or find a way to treat people in need. We all have some kind of a disorder.
Yeah.
So why not, you know, start with the kids? So I said, you know what? We need to really, really bring the services where the kids are. So instead of them being moved to go to what is physical therapy or speech therapy in different offices, with all due respect to all these professionals, they can come
bring
to the school. Bring it to the house.
It's amazing.
Where the kids are comfortable. So you can go there and join them. And the teachers can also meet with you so we can all have the same treatment plan.
That's another thing. So, you know, you when you mentioned, you know, all the kids that you'll serve. So my younger brother is autistic. And one of the things that I think was so hard growing up in the 90s and for my parents raising him was that you have the district on one level, you have his doctors on another level, you have his paraprofessionals over here, you've got his mentors, his advocates, his parents. And then when you'd all meet in a room,
right.
none of you are on the same page. Like, you right. all love the child,
exactly.
right? But you all have different aspects of it. So I love even that portion
Thank
is
you.
The fact that you're all collectively there,
right.
focused on this child at the same time, and you're hearing the results out loud. So there's
Absolutely.
No miscommunication.
Absolutely. It's
That's
a team.
Huge.
We got to be a team.
Yeah.
And it's called continuum of care. We all need to be on the same page. I can give a child that is looking for to be molded and helped and supported missed messages. You know,
mm-hmm.
the teachers need to know what you know. That way we can model the same way of supporting the child that is in distress.
Mm-hmm.
Anxiety is big. When you put a child in a room with 18 other kids and they have some kind of an anxiety, it makes it worse.
Yeah.
So the rooms in orange are smaller and they have more one-on-one attention from the staff that we have. So instead of having a toddler room that has up to 8, we only have 4 with 2 staff that are so they can give them that immediate and that comfort.
That's incredible.
You know, one-on-one attention.
That's incredible. And I would think, you know, yes, expensive, but my gosh, I see that amount being paid
yeah.
for regular daycares that are not doing anywhere near the services you're doing,
Absolutely.
Not including things like formula or like
right.
like food. I mean,
right.
get out of town. It's crazy. Now, I did notice for Orange, that's a small amount of students, though, that you guys allow in. What did you say? How many do you have?
We have 24 slots.
24 slots.
Right.
So are you guys at capacity?
Well, except that there's a long list, so
long
come
list,
and get
yeah.
it.
Yeah. yeah.
People heard about it, and they're like, wow, well, we just opened up.
So, that's what I'm wondering.
Yeah.
So for, like, the next school year.
Right, yeah. Well, we have a few slots open now. So
oh, you do?
I'm anticipating by the end of the summer we may be in full capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm urging the community to come and get it while it's still hot.
Yeah, no, that's really hard to come by. And you guys do 365?
We do.
Wow,
open
okay.
all year round.
Wow.
1 week out of the year we close down for staff training. Staff needs to be, you know, they need to be revamped. They need to go to school. You know, we bring all professionals to the center.
I love that.
And we train them on CPR, first aid, behavior modification, you name it, the whole 9 yard. For the whole 5 days, they are refreshed so they can come back, you know, more mm-hmm. educated.
Yeah,
And then
absolutely.
We close for but maybe about another 3 or 4 days after Christmas holiday when everyone is away for holidays. Other
That's
than that,
fine.
We're open from 6:30 to 5:30 Monday through Friday.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah?
How do you even staff it when we're dealing with, like, a total education workforce shortage and all the other things? Where I mean, you have LPNs on campus. How do you even do that with, like, healthcare shortages?
I've been lucky. I've been blessed, however I want to word it. It's not the money, because they're not getting paid tons and tons of money. It's just being able to find the right people
wow.
that love what they do.
Mm.
So even throughout the whole epidemic, the 3 years we had with this crazy virus, we were open.
That's amazing.
We were providing services for people that had to go to work, nurses,
right.
doctors, and cops. We were there.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of us suffered from the disease, but we pulled through like
yeah.
everybody else.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So, Bill, I guess, what if you have a child who's not showing any signs of anxiety or any sort of behavioral issues, but you just want this model of teaching? Like, I love the four kids to a classroom.
Right.
I love that.
Right.
And I don't know if you can get that kind of model, even if you were to go to a charter or a private school when they get in elementary school.
Right.
So what if you want your kids in that, but they don't have anything, quote unquote, wrong.
Right.
There's nothing that you're detecting. Can they? Can you still apply to have your kids go to the
school? Oh, yeah.
School?
The school is not exclusive. It's inclusive. Anyone can come to the center. It's a child daycare center.
It's just that you have options if need be.
Right.
I see.
So if we're, I like to have staff that are equipped. You can't teach just A, B, C, D. You have to be able to know how to handle social and emotional disorders. So my staff at both sides, really, are trained to handle social and emotional disorders.
Mm-hmm.
Orange specifically, there are advanced teachers that have the bachelor's and the experience and the training in being able to spot a child that may have any kind of a mood disorder. And when they see that, then they'll let us know. We'll do the evaluation, and then we'll provide them with service. So it's an all-inclusive school. It's not just for behavioral, social and emotional school. It should be a part of the curriculum. Social and emotional and education should be all included in what you provide a child. This is the learning stage.
Yeah. I also feel like there's a lot to be said for children who are, if you want to call them stable, if you want to call them that. But honestly, even as an adult, I'm not stable.
None of us are.
None of us are. Like things like stress, anxiety, feeling under pressure, overwhelmed, trying to socialize yourselves. Like at the age of 6 months to even a year, I mean, those are brand new concepts that any child is going to feel, even if they're not on the spectrum or dealing with something.
Absolutely.
And I think it helps them to also adjust. So by the time they're 5 or 6 years old, if they do have a classmate in the public school district, they can identify it and they can remember, oh, I used to have this person in my class and this is how we handled it.
Absolutely.
I actually think that would really help more children if we had more of that in the curriculum at a young age.
I agree.
Oh, my gosh.
I agree.
It would be. Oh, absolutely. I wish we had more of this. So we have at least these two centers that I want to make sure people can get more information if they need it. What is your website if people want to learn more, reach out, apply for one of those open slots?
Absolutely.
Where can they go? Where do they start?
So the Milford website is Good Child Development Center. Actually, both websites are intertwined.
Oh, okay.
So www.goodchilddevelopmentcenter.com or www.goodchildtransitionalcenter.com.
I noticed that because I think I punched in Transitional Center and it came
and it
up goodchilddevelopmentcenter.com.
Right.
Okay, very cool.
Right. So they're merged. So if you go site, it'll bring you there, and we have all the pages that you can apply for a job. You can sign up for your child to come to school, call, email. We got you.
I love that. Well, I'm glad I got you here on WICC, Bill Akasha, because I think what you're doing is extraordinary, the executive director of these two centers, and I look forward to having you back on the show really soon. Thank you.
I will appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely. It's June, and a lot of you are getting ready for the summer season, a lot of travel, and we talk a lot about this with AAA and making sure that you are booking your flights, booking everything ahead of time, but we just learned that a Connecticut woman was scammed out of thousands of dollars after missing her flight home. With the story, we've got the Better Business Bureau here, Kristen Johnson, serving Connecticut for the Better Business Bureau. Kristen, good morning. What happened?
Good morning, Melissa. Yeah, this is one of those stories that we hate to hear. Unfortunately, a woman in Wilton, she reached out to Better Business Bureau via our scam tracker after this happened to her in mid-April. She brought her daughter and her parents, are both in their 80s, to Ecuador. They were taking a flight from Miami to JFK. Unfortunately, their flight into Miami was an hour late, so they missed their connecting flight. It was the end of the day, no more flights out. Lines were just crazy in the Miami airport. Apparently, there had been several flights that were delayed. A lot of people missed their connections. She happens to be a American Airlines Platinum Pro member, so she went upstairs to try to get help there. They were closing their desk, so no help, unfortunately. The airline put them up in a hotel, so she needed to get her parents back to the room. They're older. They were having trouble walking. They'd been on a long flight. It was just, they needed to get to bed. So she said, you know what? Let's just head to the hotel. I'll figure it out when we get there.
Yeah, we've all done that. I think that sounds pretty common sense. Sure.
Yeah. So she gets in a taxi and she looks up the American Airlines Platinum Pro member phone number. And she gets on a website that looks official. It's got the American Airlines logo. The fonts look official. She calls the number. The people that answer claim they work for American Airlines. And they put her through to what they call a rebooker for the airline. So she, at this point, still thinks that she's speaking to American Airlines representative.
Sure, why not?
They tell her that the flights are full for the next 2 days on American Airlines. And she believes it because she saw the crowds in the airline. She saw the people waiting at the customer service desk. So her options are to wait 2 days or to fly on another airline. And they say you can get a flight out tomorrow on Delta. But it's going to cost you $3,700. So she takes a pause. You know, that's a lot of money. And they get aggressive with her, which is a red flag. A reputable company will never get aggressive with you, especially customer service.
Right.
And they say, you know, you're going to run out of time here. If you don't grab this flight, you're going to be waiting for 2 days in Miami before you can fly back home. She's like, that's a lot of money. I just need to think about it overnight. And they get more aggressive. You know, she says, I feel like American Airlines should pick up the tab. You guys were the ones that delayed the flight and made me miss my connection.
Mm-hmm.
And he says to her, no, we didn't mess up. You messed up. You are the only one that didn't make it on the plane. Everyone else made it on the plane.
Okay, so let's pause for a quick second and let's talk about this interaction between this poor woman who's just trying to find her way home and the person that she is talking to. Kristen, we have seen in really any industry, you will find that cranky person. You will find that person who just doesn't like their job, or they had a bad day, or they don't want to be there that day, or they went through something and now they got to sit at work until their time is up. And you do have that bad interaction. But are there certain things in this exchange that you would still never, ever hear from a professional?
I think the pressure to make a decision is a red flag. And that is a lot of money. And I think at that point, you need to ask for a manager. And you need to really do your due diligence and allow yourself to take that pause. You know, she said to us at the time, she actually was in tears because she had a 17-year-old daughter who needed to get back to school.
Mm-hmm.
She was worried about her missing school. This is right after spring break. And so it was like, I need to make a game time decision here. Like, I need to get my family back home. My parents need to get home. But at the same time, that's a lot of money. Something doesn't feel right. So you really do got to trust your gut. And she said, you know, looking back at it, I feel very manipulated. I was just feeling very anxious and I just reacted and made a decision quickly. And that's where I made the mistake. I should have paused. So that, not only that aggression, because you're right, there are, not every customer service agent is going to be sweet and polite to you. But certainly when you're in that position of like, you've just missed your flight, you would expect them to be a little kinder.
Certainly not to say you're the only one who missed that flight. I've never heard of that, right? Like, can you really even say that, no, you're the only one? I mean, how do you even know that in a matter of, but again, like you said, you're under pressure and a lot of times we're not thinking. And she did feel she called the right number, which is the big concern here. So Kristen Johnson is here. She's sharing this story of this poor woman in Will Inn. She's on vacation with her family. She misses her connecting flight and she's trying to rebook. And she is, in fact, connected to a scammer who's claiming to work for the company, does not. And unfortunately, how much money did she end up paying after? Obviously, the scammer got her.
So fast forward the next day, she makes the decision to call the number back, books the flight. It's over $3,700. And she actually made it home without any issue, but a couple weird things, another red flag. So she gives them her credit card information over the phone to pay, but then they also ask her to take a picture of it and her driver's license and say that's TSA protocol. That is not TSA protocol. They will never ask you to email a picture of your driver's license.
Right, because you have to still go through TSA. Why would you send it to TSA? Right.
The scammers claim that because she was booking over the phone and not over the internet, she had to send them a picture of her driver's license.
Oh, for goodness
And again,
sake.
If you've never been in this situation before, you wouldn't know whether that's true or not.
Exactly.
I mean, you're not necessarily thinking clearly either. You're in panic mode. You just want to get home. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've been out of the country for however long. You just want to get home. And we're talking about a woman who is a professional. This is a well-educated woman. It can happen to anyone.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it happened to her. But she gets home and she looks at her credit card statement, and there's two separate charges that add up to that $3,700. The tickets themselves were only $232 a piece. So that's less than $1,000. And then there was this separate charge for more than $2,800 due to a company called Travel Experts, TRLV, and then a little star, Experts.
Which is not real.
So that's not a company. That's not. I mean, there's a lot of companies out there that have travel in the name, that have experts in the name, but this is not. They do not have a website. This is not a legitimate company. And then she looked at the confirmation email that she had gotten and realized the email came from someone who used Flight Ticket Expert with one T. So the word FLIGHTICKET expert.com in the domain name. It didn't say American Airlines. So that's another red flag. So the scam company got the over $2,800, and then the other did pay for her Delta airline tickets home.
Wow. Now, because she used a credit card, though, Kristen, which is something the Better Business Bureau always says to do, can she fight those charges or no?
She is.
She
is fighting
them.
Wait 90 days.
Okay.
This happened in mid-April, so she's still waiting to hear back from the credit card company.
Wow.
But she has... And that's what we would say to do. That is your best bet. And now she's just waiting to hear back. But this is not a real merchant. Travel Experts is not a real merchant. Flight Ticket Expert isn't even a website anymore. And she tried to call the number, and it didn't work. The number that she had originally called to book these tickets no longer works.
So, Kristen Johnson, Better Business Bureau, serving Connecticut. What are some tips to avoid travel scams like the one that our friend here in Wilton went through?
So if you need to get a hold of the airline, go back and find your receipt in your email and call the phone number that's in that receipt. Don't do a Google search. Go to the American Airlines website and look up the Platinum Pro information. Call American Airlines directly. You got to be really careful when you just do a Google search for a website, because you're going to come up with scam websites. We saw a similar scam popping up a lot last summer nationally. So it was only a matter of time before it hit Connecticut. And what was happening is people were searching for cheap tickets online, and they were getting these scam websites. Scammers are really good at creating fake websites. They can copy logos. They can copy fonts. They can make you think you're at the real thing. And unless you take a second look at that URL at the top, you think you're really on American Airlines website, or you're really on a legitimate website. And so they would buy these tickets, and then they would get a phone call. And the person on the other end would say, you know what, that ticket price just went up. We haven't charged your credit card yet. You're going to have to pay X amount more in order to get this seat. Or that flight has been canceled. You need to plan this flight. Take this flight instead, but it's going to cost you more money. So there's similar, there's different versions of the same scam. But in reality, if you're on a website for a company you've never heard of, you need to do a little extra research. And you can start by going to BBB.org. Look at customer reviews. See what other people have said. And do a Google search of that company with the word scam to see if other people have been scammed. And, of course, go to BBB Scam Tracker. You'll see this woman's scam report, as well as any others from people, not only in Connecticut but all over the country, who have unfortunately been targeted by similar travel scams.
Kristen, I really appreciate the heads up, and I do hope that she can get most of her money back in this situation. And luckily, like you said, she used a credit card, so she can at least shut it down, mm-hmm. and nobody else can take money from her, at least through that source. But thank you for the heads up, and hopefully it ends better than this story started, that's for sure.
Yeah, it was an expensive lesson that she learned.
Certainly. Well, we appreciate you and the Better Business Bureau. And again, any more information you need, go to BBB.org. Thank you, Kristen.
Thanks, Melissa.